This is an RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is a community organisation and relies on volunteer and listener support. To learn more about what we do, visit rtrfm.com.au.
This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Welcome to the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. My name is Raymond Grenfell, but before we get any further, a huge thanks to Jeff for another excellent edition of On The Record. He'll be back next week, but of course you can catch On The Record every weekday here at RTRFM from 9 in the AM. Thanks also to Brianna. She'll be back at 12 o'clock with more RTRFM news. As I said, this is the Indie Media Show. If you don't know, that's all the news and interviews and views from the open publishing wires of the interwebs. I'll be with you till 12 o'clock today. And on today's program, we're going to be returning to, I guess, an issue that we've covered quite extensively on Indie Media, and that is the ongoing homelessness crisis in this state, specifically focusing on the Western Australian Aboriginal homelessness crisis. We're going to be hearing from Brendan Jones, who's a Noongar man who has spent the entire pandemic period on the streets in Perth. Last week, during WA's fourth lockdown, he was evicted by police from an empty building he and others had been sheltering in. And this weekend passed, they were forced to decamp to Northbridge in the midst of the torrential rain and flash floods. So he spoke to Indie Media's Jesse Noakes about the impact on his health, his mental health, his family, and just in general, his spirit from living on the streets. We're also going to be hearing from Dorinda Cox, who's the lead federal Senate candidate for the WA Greens and a Yamatji Noongar woman. She's been working for some time as an advocate and working extensively on health and housing, especially for Indigenous peoples. And she was also down there on Sunday, so Jesse spoke to her about the ongoing homelessness crisis as well. So somewhat of a, what do you call it, sort of a specialty show today on Indie Media, looking at the this issue that, as I said, we have covered quite extensively, often because not much, you know, corporate or mainstream media tend to focus on this ongoing issue that really, particularly this time of year, is something we should all be concerned about. But up first on the show, we're going to hear from Run The Jewels. This is from their third release, RTJ3. This is a report to the shareholders. You're on the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Now, as I said at the top of the program, we're going to be focusing on the issue of Aboriginal homelessness in Western Australia, an issue, unfortunately, that goes very much underreported, and also, of course, many political parties, at least the major parties, tend to, while they say a lot, they haven't really delivered on any promises or done anything to address this growing crisis that we face in our state. Indie Media's Jesse Noakes is someone who's been very much involved in the campaign and advocating for those that find themselves on the streets or finding themselves in precarious housing arrangements or homeless. And this week, he had the opportunity to speak to Brendan Jones.
For most of us, it's been a week of staying home in Perth. First, it was lockdown, and then almost as soon as that was over, the storms rolled in. But of course, as we've highlighted relentlessly on this show, for some people, staying home's a luxury they don't have. Brendan is one of those people. He was camped on Beaufort Street in Northbridge last week until the cops turned up and told him in the middle of lockdown that he had to leave back out onto the streets. And James Street's where he ended up, sheltering from the storm as best he could with a dozen or so other people until midway through yesterday afternoon, a flash flood rolled in and left him all ankle deep in water. And shortly afterwards, I rolled up and had a chat to him.
All right, Brendan, if you're ready to go,
Yep. Can
you tell us where we are and what's been happening the past couple of hours?
We're on James Street. We were sleeping there. We moved from Russell Square because of the rain. Well, our new sleep spot was worse than because of the rain. We got flooded. Everything of ours is all just flooded, you know, up to nearly 10, 15 centimetres deep.
How long's it been raining for?
Oh, about 3 hours now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so what have you done with all your stuff?
We're going to have to probably just chuck it all out. We're collecting it, but
yeah,
it's going to grow mould and mildew really quick.
Right, okay. Yeah. Where have you been prior to this? Before you were at Russell Square and on James Street, where'd you been before?
Tent City, Fremantle.
Okay.
What
happened after that?
I don't understand what happened after that. We were put into accommodation and by the communities or whatever, told that there was an outcome to whatever they was doing, accommodating us.
Yeah.
But there was no outcome. It was just,
right, okay.
Yeah.
So we've just moved out of the fourth lockdown in WA. What happened to you this lockdown?
Oh, no, I just get real... I'm just getting weaker.
Yeah.
Worn down, but I'm trying to keep my brain alert for...
Yeah.
What's going on around me, but the body's not working with the brain. Yeah.
No, well, it's not surprising. I can see you don't have any shoes right now, do you?
No.
What happened?
And
to
I'm
them?
Burning. The rain and people just, the shoes just get ruined and taken.
Yeah.
So I don't really blame anybody, but having nothing in general.
Yeah. And you're not very well, are you?
No, that's why I'm sitting here resting, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your health situation?
Well, at the moment, my old bones and body, I've got septic arthritis right riddled through my body. It's burning just from the coldness.
Yeah.
I've got a heart condition, I've got stents, I've had a massive heart attack. I take psychotic tablets, I take all different varieties of tablets.
Is it easy to take your meds while you're on the street?
Oh, no.
You're breathing really heavily now. Are you all right?
I'm just a little bit worn down. It's each and every day, I'm getting worn more. I don't know. I don't do the energetic things I normally... last year, anyway.
Yeah.
And that's only months. That's just went past. I haven't got that energy for months ago.
Okay.
I don't like the idea of it.
And on a Thursday afternoon, I understand you'd been staying somewhere...
Oh, yeah, on Beaufort Street.
And what happened?
We were told to move. A couple of people that we all squat together with, some of them got mental disabilities, mental issues. It's a health problem. We don't know how to deal with their health problem, but they've got anger problems with that mental issue. I don't even know how to describe what goes on.
And so where were you staying on Beaufort Street? Can you describe it?
It was a veranda of an accountancy place.
Right.
A building. It was like just a normal house, but we just...
Was the house occupied?
No, it wasn't. It was empty. I think the building and the business sat down.
Right, so you were camped on that veranda?
Yep.
How many of you?
Oh, it used to get up to 30 there.
Oh, my goodness.
But you'd only probably see about 8 to 10 during the day, and just no time.
And why were you on that veranda? Was there a particular reason?
Shelter. And a couple of the people that I interact with in the group, they're a little bit mothery with me and my sickness and my health. And I don't like it, but I suppose if I didn't have them to push my brain and my dilemma, I wouldn't act. I wouldn't have... energy anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And so then what happened on Thursday?
We got told to move because I wasn't there the previous night before to know what exactly happened.
Who told you to move?
The police. I wasn't there when that happened either, but the information was they came back night time anyway about between 8:30 and 9 and said we could follow through and have one more night as long as we left by the morning the next morning. But we moved out during that night, eh?
Right, and can you go back there?
No. unless maybe we've got to speak to the manager of the place, the person yeah. who owns and occupies it.
Yeah. But that, I mean, that was during the middle of lockdown last week, right? Did they offer you any help to stay off?
I don't think we even got anything in the way of help with the lockdown. That's maybe a word for prisoners.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't get included in community lockdown, so.
Right. So while everyone else.
That's what it feels like, anyway.
Yeah, how does it feel to know that everyone else is staying at home?
I can't wait to seriously end my, like, my this life. This is the most poxiest life to ever want to be born into, this misery. But I suppose it's mistakes. It's a government mistake because they're supposed to. They took me when I was five, and nothing. There's no outcome to any government issue. Welfare kid taken off. They just come back, pushed out there, and. Right, the criminals, jailbirds, no-hopers. The government taught us to be that. Not state wards or kids in care. No-hopers. That's what we ended up, because there was no hope for us when we left that care. State ward for till we're 18, and then, oh, what the hell? No set up for the rest of your life. And they want you to be a baby and then a man and then leave. Who gives a fuck about you?
Oh. What help have you been offered since you left there at 18?
Nothing whatsoever. As soon as I run away from there, I couldn't stand being there when I was 17, 10 and 8. And Anglicare. I went from a Catholic mission to an Anglican mission, police, and they helped me when I was... I don't know what to say about religions, but, yeah.
And now you've got kids of your own.
Yeah, I do.
And you're still...
And I won't go anywhere near my kids or until I can better myself. I want them to see a good person, not this. I don't know. People think that moving onto the streets is a fun party way of living. Try it, and try judging that way.
What would it take for you to be able to better yourself so that you felt able to see your kids?
Not die on the streets. And I've seen three people already in the last 2 years on these streets. And, I mean, we're across the road from where one of them only like 4 or 5 months ago. And that was just being cold, no rugs.
Is that someone you knew?
Quite well.
That's... That must be very hard to be forced to.
Yeah, well, I used to come and check on him at least second day, but he had things under control, it seemed to be, but just not himself, I suppose. It's my type of predicament.
What would make this easier for you? What?
I want a good night's sleep, a hot shower, and just to be seen by medical... and properly a full health assessment, heart check. This, I can't go for my CTs on this aneurysm. And I don't know. I've got a broken eye socket, a fractured nose, and I can't even get that dealt with. And that's just from being assaulted 3 or 4 months ago. 3 months ago, yeah? I got kicked in the face. I don't know.
So you said that it's the government who left you in this predicament. If you could talk to them and ask them to do something for you, what would
you... It's a stolen generation. It's because I was a part of that. I don't even know any of my culture, my family, or my way. I feel like an arsehole because I got caught a fucking coconut most of my life, and I hate that bullshit. I've got no belief in culture type thing. And I believe in my people, but whatever happened to the culture?
23 years ago, they published a report called Bringing Them Home. Do you feel like that applies to you? To people you
probably
know?
But I don't think it was bringing them home. It was taking them and dumping them. Chuck the responsibility somewhere else. I'm pretty sure they knew that all the floggings that they used to give the kids in the homes, in the missions, I'm sure these adults knew that it was going to catch up with them.
Yeah. Yeah, and you haven't had any compensation for that, have you?
None whatsoever, not one filthy cent.
Brendan Jones there, growing audibly weaker as we spoke. 44 years old and still nothing from this state that's taken so much from him. Just a doorway in a thunderstorm the day after lockdown. Don't know about you, I reckon we're well overdue with the rent.
Jesse Noakes there speaking to Brendan Jones, a Noongar man who has spent the entire pandemic period on the streets in Perth. And I reckon if that doesn't move you to anger and sadness and despair, there might be something a little bit wrong with you. We're going to be continuing that story shortly when we hear from Dorinda Cox, who is a lead federal Senate candidate for the WA Greens and a Yamatji Noongar woman.
You're listening to the Indie Media Podcast, first broadcast on RTRFM 92.1.
We're now going to return to our conversation about the ongoing crisis, the homelessness crisis here in Western Australia. Indie Media's Jesse Noakes had the opportunity to speak to Greens lead Senate candidate and Yamatji Noongar woman Dorinda Cox.
Dorinda Cox is the lead Senate candidate for the WA Greens and a Yamatji Noongar woman. She was down there yesterday, arvo, in the driving rain, having a yarn with Brendan and the others. And after she talked with him, she had a chat with me and had some suggestions for some other local politicians.
So, Dorinda, we're down on James Street in Northbridge on the Sunday after lockdown, and we've just been speaking with Brendan and some other people who are camped down here. How does it make you feel seeing, a large group of predominantly Indigenous people forced to be out in the elements on a day like this?
It makes me extremely sad, Jesse. I mean, and just disappointed. Disappointed in the way that this is the current level of acceptability in our society, that we still have people who are First Nations people, First People of this country, who are living and really surviving on the street in really unacceptable conditions. So it really deeply saddens me that, one, my community are not outraged and that we are not taking more action as a community, but also that the broader community don't actually see anything wrong at a systems level that they could make the changes that are, with a stroke of a pen, in most instances, the political levers that need to be pulled to make this change.
Mm-hmm. So my understanding is that the group who are down here are largely people who were moved on by police from an empty building they were occupying in further up in Northbridge last Thursday, which was in the middle of lockdown, obviously. Now, from what they've told us this afternoon, it doesn't sound like they were offered any support beyond the threat of move-on notices by the police. What would you like to see happen in that sort of situation in future? Because there may well be more lockdowns, before too long in WA.
I definitely think there needs to be a coordinated response. I think both from a government level, but also a non-government level in relation to the sector. My serious concern is obviously we're in a lockdown situation. We have community contact tracing. I got caught up in that last week. I was at IKEA shopping and had to have COVID testing. So this can happen just to anybody, that we're exposed as a community to the Delta strain of COVID-19. If that was to happen in our community here and with the people that we're currently working with, or that you work with, Jesse, this is such a frightening and such a huge risk, because they don't have the means to be able to keep themselves safe. Mm. They don't have the means to be able to really elicit that level of detail about, their contacts in relation to the spread of COVID-19. So my concern is that we have a national roadmap and that we don't have an actual rapid response plan around the rollout of vaccines in this state, but particularly in this area, in the Perth CBD, which is densely populated as an urban environment. And we already know that Aboriginal or First Nations people have, acute health issues and chronic disease that they manage on a daily basis. But they're a priority and vulnerable group, and they should be given vaccines as a first call.
Why do you think that's not happening What do you see kind of looking around the country as well at responses in other states and territories? And obviously vaccines this week have been a very hot button issue and the various states have kind of been talking over each other at times. But why do you think there's been a sort of a failure in WA to respond with the immediacy that you're talking about?
I think we just don't have a plan and we don't have any political will to do that. I think they're the two easy answers in that. And I think that Minister Cook can make that decision. I think that he could make a decision to have all of the people that we currently see that are street present out of these elements here in the middle of winter, out of the extreme risk of COVID-19. We have buildings such as the old Princess Margaret Hospital, which is vacant now. You know, we could put people into accommodation if we actually had a plan. If we had a strategy where police were moving them onto somewhere, we could actually do that. And I'm really saddened to think that, you know, our Chief Medical Officer, our Police Commissioner and our Minister for Health, alongside the Premier, haven't made those decisions in the best interests of people's health, welfare and safety, more so.
And I mean, you and I both know all too well that there was planning around this. I mean, it feels like we've moved in and out of lockdown for the last 15 months, and it feels like we're having the same conversation we were having in March last year. I mean, there was intensive planning around aspects of this way back then, and I don't know whether they've just been sitting on the shelf since then or whether they've been kind of tossed out as last year's news or what, but it feels as though it's kind of a sense of deja vu where we've almost moved backwards, if anything, and we're responding with less rigour and decision when it's kind of when it's still patently needed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the inner workings or inner machinery of government, we've had lots of change through director generals and senior managers. We've had that shifting sand that's been happening, but we've maintained still post-election, state election here in WA, the same leaders. So essentially what hasn't been done is it's been action through those government departments. And as you say, Jess, the lack of action, I think, to actually move quicker in relation to response. And you and I were both involved in the, you know, putting people at Woodman's Point last year to get them off the street and to respond to COVID as part of that rapid response. And yes, it had good and bad elements to it. It was a learning. But what it did, it was an action that was followed through. And I think that's what we seriously lack right now. And we are seeing the impact. We are seeing people dying on the street. I've just spoken to Connie about the lady that passed away here in the church last week. You know, we are seeing people dying on the street. This is a life and death situation for people who are living on the streets. And it does. It deeply saddens me that we are not getting action from our government or leadership on this issue.
And I mean, you know, this is an old refrain for me. This is all familiar territory in some ways, but it's not as though COVID, you know, it's not as though the risk to people down here on the street or to the rest of the community passes when lockdown passes. I mean, the fact that people, First Nations people, vulnerable parts, members of our community are forced to live out here through a second winter in the midst of a pandemic is an ongoing crisis in my view, and I've been pretty vocal about that. What would you be advocating for or pushing for at both a state and a federal level to kind of to redress that?
I think we definitely need a better investment in housing, particularly from a federal level. I think that we need to look at the rental housing prices, and I know that in the Senate they've talked about that it's now $486 a week is the sort of medium rental price here in Perth. And you know, that's for people who are living below the poverty line. So unless we lift that threshold at a federal level and we start making that investment, we are not going to shift any of this. And so even at a state level, we have such a huge budget surplus, but we are still not making that investment into housing. And that troubles me because I just think that if in a 10-year roadmap that they've built around the all paths leading to homes, you know, that we should be thinking about, you know, what are the flexible services? What does access look like for people? But also actually building the houses that are necessary. And I think the Greens have been the only ones talking about this, that we've lost 1,400 in stock as part of that last 4 years. So we have gone backwards in a sense. So we need to move that forward. We need to accelerate that. And we need to get people who are on the priority wait list into housing. as soon as possible, and we need to do that through whatever means that looks like. And it has to be around crisis accommodation. It has to be around making sure that we have long-term strategies for this. But we need to make some action and some steps towards doing that.
And speaking of action and steps, what can the community do you think, if they're appalled like we both are with the reality of what's happening on the ground? What do you think the average listener could do to try and to get the government moving, I suppose?
I think the power is in every constituent, in every electorate across this country, that we have to use our voice. Our voice is the most powerful, and I think the people power is the thing that we have to keep doing. But we also have to think about how we donate our time, how we donate our money, how we donate our energy into movements such as this. And I think that the average listener does have power, and we have power in conversations. Yeah. We have power in being outraged. We have power in talking to the media. So I think there's very, very different stages and standard, levels that we can talk at that about. But I think that the average person, we need to get back to that community spirit. This is our community. We need to think about how, if this was us at any point in our lives that we ended up being homeless, what would we want people to do for us and to reach out and help us? So I think we need to get back to the human aspect of this.
Mm. Okay. And just lastly, where does the buck stop? Is it a state issue? Is it a federal issue? Is it a local government issue? Is it Basil Zemplis? Is it Mark McGowan? Is it Scott Morrison? Who do you reckon?
I think it's a tripartisan agreement across all three.
Yeah.
And what I would like to see is that there is some leadership at a federal level through the Morrison Joyce government.
Yeah.
I would like to see that Premier McGowan also provides leadership at a state level, what he has jurisdiction over. But I also really, really hope that City of Perth under Basil is making movement towards his own leadership at a local level. And if that means coming down here and sitting and listening to what's going on a Sunday rainy afternoon when we would all prefer to be tucked away under a heater, then I would basically say you need to get down here.
I saw Basil tweeted out this afternoon, speaking of being tucked away at home, that he'd been down to the Safe Night Shelter for Women last night and seen what a fabulous job they were doing down there. Do you think that's enough?
No, it's not enough. I think that you need to be visible, you need to be seen to be not just turning up, but actually actioning some of that and your commitment to this. And I know Basil on previous occasions has talked about, using underground car parks and others for shelter for homeless people, but we saw no action. So this has to be backed by action. We have to walk the talk. Mm. We can't just keep saying, oh yes, but we're turning up. I'm turning up, but I'm actually using my voice to advocate really strongly for the issues that I know matter, and I'm going to go to the table and I'm going to keep making noise and I'm going to keep advocating for people who are voiceless on the streets. And I know that this is a really, really important issue. It's a humanitarian issue. It's something that every person has a human right for, is to make sure that they have shelter.
There you go, Baz. Give us a call. I'm sure you've got our numbers.
Thank you.
Thanks. Dorinda Cox there, lead federal Senate candidate for the WA Greens, with a call to the community and a call to our leaders at federal, state and local level to step up. And seriously, Baz, let's give people like Brendan somewhere safe, warm and dry to sleep at night, and let's put some real pressure on Premier Mark McGowan to use his $5 billion surplus at the September budget to build some bloody houses.
Indie Media's Jesse Noakes there, speaking to, as he said, Greens lead Senate candidate and Yamaji Noongar woman Dorinda Cox about the ongoing homelessness crisis here in our state. And if I may, just to quickly editorialise on that, I think fundamentally the issue is we need to stop thinking that we live in some kind of meritocracy in which no matter your circumstances, if you just work hard enough, you can achieve great success in this neoliberal capitalist wonderland. Obviously, that's not the case. And really, we need to start thinking about the kind of community and the kind of world and the kind of lives we want to live in. And hopefully, that includes a little bit of solidarity, a little bit of mutual aid, a little bit of actually caring for one another. One thing you can do, though, right now, if you are concerned about the ongoing homelessness crisis here in Western Australia, and certainly if you've listened to the entire program and you heard from Brendan Jones earlier, really, really hope that you're moved to take action. One thing you can do is we suggest that you can call the Minister for Housing and local member for Perth, John Carey, and perhaps ask him why there's still over 1,000 people on the streets in Perth, half of them Aboriginal, during a second pandemic winter, while the state has a $5 billion budget surplus. So yeah, maybe give John a call and ask him what's going on. And then think about other things you can do, including acting in solidarity with folks that find themselves on the streets. This is the Indie Media Show. My name is Raymond Grenfell, and it's now time for a bit of Indie Media news. Canada continues to bake under a heat dome that's shattered all-time temperature records, with heat warnings in effect all the way from British Columbia to Ontario. Between Wednesday and Thursday last week, meteorologists logged an unprecedented 700,000 lightning events in Western Canada. Driven by pyrocumulonimbus clouds from wildfires, the lightning strikes in turn sparked new blazes. They followed Canada's all-time record high of 50 degrees Celsius, set in the town of Lytton on Tuesday. The town was almost completely destroyed on Wednesday by a wildfire. And in the United States, Indigenous leaders and climate justice activists blockaded access to the White House last Wednesday, calling on President Biden to invest more in climate justice initiatives in his infrastructure plans and to stop fossil fuel projects, including Enbridge's Line 3 pipeline and the Mountain Valley pipeline. And in Turkey, thousands took to the streets as the government officially withdrew from the Istanbul Convention, a landmark international treaty aimed at preventing gender-based violence. Turkey was the very first country to sign the convention when it was ratified 10 years ago. At least 300 femicides were recorded in Turkey last year, and more protests are planned this coming week. In Afghanistan, the US military has left Bagram Airfield after nearly 20 years, a key center of command in America's longest war. An Afghan official said US forces did not coordinate the departure with local authorities, resulting in a period of looting at the airbase before Afghan forces took over control. As the US winds down its withdrawal from Afghanistan, at least 650 troops are expected to remain to secure the US embassy in Kabul. Meanwhile, Taliban forces have taken control of dozens of districts in recent weeks. And protests erupted in occupied East Jerusalem on Tuesday after Israeli forces equipped with bulldozers entered the Palestinian neighborhood of Silwan and demolished a local business in the Al-Boston area, claiming the butcher shop did not have a proper permit. Israeli soldiers used tear gas and beat protesters with batons. At least 13 Palestinians were injured. And former Defence Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has died at the age of 88. Serving under George W. Bush, Rumsfeld oversaw the illegal US invasion and occupation of Iraq. He also authorized the systemic torture of men held in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Guantanamo. Human rights attorneys repeatedly tried to hold him accountable by filing war crimes charges against him overseas. That's about all we have time for today on the Indie Media Show. If you enjoyed the program, you can always restream it at rtrfm.com.au. You can also listen to our individual interviews via our SoundCloud. And you can always get in touch with us via either the RTRFM offices, or you can find us on the corporate social media if that's your thing. We always really welcome story ideas or any sort of content in that regard. It's all about you being the media. So if you've got something you'd like to share or a story idea, please do get in touch. Coming up very shortly, though, Rianne Todhunter is going to take you out to lunch. That's all your new music needs. Of course, we've got the news with Brianna at 12 o'clock. And yeah, as I said, we'll be back next week at 11 a.m. But yeah, we'll be back next week. And as we say every week, don't hate the media, become the media.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?